Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE, the Columbus Metro Club's weekly program that cultivates the conversations that drive Columbus forward. Every Wednesday, The Forum brings together visionary leaders to examine issues that matter. Tickets and information about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. In a recent survey carried out by the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, Central Ohio residents described exactly what they want: more affordable housing, accessible childcare, and more jobs that pay a living wage. This week, we hear from key leaders whose visionary work is translating that mandate into reality in Central Ohio. This week's panelists are Lynn-Ann Gutierrez, President and CEO of Groundwork Ohio; Ian Labatou, President and CEO of the Affordable Housing Trust for Columbus and Franklin County; Sangeeta Lakhani, Executive Director of Service Relief for Hospitality Workers; and William Murdoch, Executive Director of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. We'll also hear opening remarks by Padmini Roy Dixon with the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Our host is Dr. Harvey Miller, Director of the Center for Urban and Regional Analysis at The Ohio State University. Let's join this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum. From survey to shovel, let's get real about regional priorities.
Thanks, Sophia. Good afternoon. It's really exciting to be here to see the survey results being analyzed by this impressive panel. MARPC, just to give everybody a background, is a regional planning commission. We have 90 local government members in suburban, urban, and rural communities across a 15-county region in Central Ohio. MARPC every year does a Leaders Listen survey on one of its core focus areas. This year, for the first time, we surveyed economic development to get feedback from area residents on their top priorities, concerns, challenges, opportunities when it comes to the local and regional economy. We received responses from over 2,100 residents. And what we learned from those feedback responses was the point about concerns around access to childcare, limited affordable housing options, especially around workforce housing, and rising cost of living. On the brighter side, residents also told us about their positive outlook when it comes to optimism, when it comes to jobs, as well as support for built infrastructure investments and utility capacities. Today, this impressive panel of experts will address some of those concerns, challenges, and opportunities residents shared with us, and leave us with some clear calls to action. At this time, I'd like to invite today's moderator, Dr. Harvey Miller, to the podium. Thank you.
Okay, thanks everyone. Happy to be here. Happy to moderate this panel on this very interesting collection of surveys, and there's really a lot to unpack here. So let's get started. Some opening questions, kind of big picture questions. The MORPC surveys collectively show that residents are worried about affordability, about housing, childcare, cost of living, and yet they're also optimistic about jobs, economic growth. So residents say they're optimistic about jobs and growth, but at the same time, they're deeply worried about housing, childcare, and the cost of living. How do we make sense of that? Let's start at this end.
Sure, thank you. So what I was saying is it doesn't surprise me that there's disconnect. We talk with families and professionals, certainly, that live in this community and across the state all the time. People are excited. They're building dreams for their families. And then they're also realistically dealing with all of these barriers that get in the way of realizing the dreams for children and families. And as we survey our families that we connect with across the state, these three issues are the top issues in every community, whether you're talking to a business chamber or families or residents. Quality, affordable childcare is something that always has been getting in the way, but is really at a fever pitch right now. We are building excellent jobs for people and families to build their dreams on, and every attempt to fully avail themselves of the workforce is met with a childcare barrier for those parents, particularly of young children, but parents of all ages of children. So we're building a good job. Can you imagine then that, say, you're going to make $20 an hour, which isn't the median wage, but $20 an hour, over half of your wage will go to childcare if you don't have support from public funds. So almost $11 of that $20 wage. And it's so exciting to be here together talking about these issues because they all weigh so heavily on a family's budget. We know that access, even if you can afford childcare, is very difficult to find. 40% of all Ohio Ohioans live in a childcare desert. So from community to community, that looks different here in this region. But families also, even if there may be childcare capacity or available slots, who's to say it meets the needs of that family, that job? There's very little childcare capacity that covers shift work or evening work for many of those new jobs we're creating. How about parental choice? What if a family prefers to send their child to a family home childcare and not a center-based care? You don't get choice. And from affordability standpoint, the average cost of infant care across the state is almost $14,000 a year. And I would say in Central Ohio, my youngest is 8 months years old, so I have some recent experience in this, $14,000 a year is pretty good. I was on a wait list for $1,900 a month here in Columbus. So, again, any way we can ease families to ease the burden, whether it's making progress in housing or otherwise, we just have to be aware that those good jobs can only do so much when the dollar doesn't go that far given the cost of childcare and these other concerns that are weighing on our families.
You make such a really good point about, the $11 out of the 20 going towards childcare. There's a housing wage in Ohio, which is $22 an hour, and only 21% of the jobs that are in Ohio there's 21% of jobs that don't meet that threshold. And so there's a real disconnect between what I think is aspirational, which is a new job, a new announcement for a defense company coming or Intel company coming, and there being an opportunity to move into a different income bracket, and then the reality of what's happening in your household today, which is paying that rent, paying that mortgage, paying that childcare cost, paying for a car that's broken down and having to pivot from a transportation perspective. And so the disconnect is a timing thing. I'm really happy to know that there's optimism on the income front, but what the Leaders Listen survey clearly stated was that there's a lot of pessimism about housing affordability. And we have to ensure that we are investing in how we finance housing, how we build housing, how we bring all of our partners together in order to execute on those goals. Because for me, housing stability is what really drives economic mobility. And so if you're thinking about where your dollars are going to and you're spending well over 30% of your income to pay your housing costs, you're worried about childcare, you're worried about all of those other aspects of your life, and you have no real means to be economically mobile, which really and truthfully is the American dream. And so housing affordability is something that we focus on even beyond affordable housing, because that nuanced change speaks to everyone's thoughts around how much they spend for their housing. Whether you're in a lower income job or you're making over six figures, there are people making over six figures that are making cuts in their budget because of, just increasing costs all around. And so if those folks are making those kind of choices, imagine the type of choices that people are making with lower income jobs.
I'm not an academic. I'm not data driven. I don't do surveys. I work shoulder to shoulder with the hospitality industry. The hospitality industry makes up 10% of jobs in Ohio. Hope is a human resource, right? So when people are hopeful, I'm not looking at surveys, I'm talking to people. They need that hope. They need to get up and come to work every single day. They need the hope to keep them alive. I'm glad people are still hopeful. We're talking about living wages being at $22, and that's great. The people I work with make minimum wage. affordable housing is not affordable to them. Childcare is not an option to them. They miss a day of work because their child's sick. That's taking a punch in the gut to most people I work with. So I love that we're having these conversations. I love that there's hope. I love that there's more workforce programs that are bringing more training to people that might not be able to go to school. I'm glad we're giving people that step up. But this conversation is a lot deeper, and you know, obviously we could spiral with this conversation, but you know, it's not a one thing, right? It's not a livable wage thing, because even at livable wage, even at your $22 an hour, you can't really live. I would love to challenge anybody here to go 1 month on a livable wage with no safety net, just $22 an hour, go get some stuff done, and then we can talk about livable wage next month's forum. But until then, I'm glad we are hopeful, you know, because we all need that. You know, let's keep spreading the hope while we're making some tangible differences too.
So I love how this conversation was set up here. When I look at those survey results, when I hear my fellow panelists here, this is a region that is growing. It's a region that is optimistic about its future, but a region that knows that we can get better. It's a region that's stressed. And when you dive into those numbers, when you hear these stories, I love how you put the talking to people on the ground, because this is why we do the Leaders Listen survey. Is if you know MORPC, we work 90 communities, as Padmini said, from Logan County to Logan City, from Prairie Township to Columbus. Everywhere in that region is thinking and talking and worried about the same types of things, maybe in different levels. When we work on our policy and best practices and we look at federal and state funding to help solve those challenges, you can't really make good decisions unless you talk to people on the ground. And so this survey we do every year, and I'm so proud of our data team on this, over 2,000 people from every county in the region are voicing how they're feeling about the region. And you dive into those results and you see exactly what I'm talking about. You see that on the issue of housing, 72% of people say housing is too expensive in the region. And this cuts across every type of community. Cuts across every type of community. When you ask people if they're optimistic about housing, it's about 25%. And I know my data team will cringe here, but if you do the simple math, basically anybody who's optimistic about housing doesn't think there's a problem. So I think this is something that when we talk about ways that this region can get better, I think people have an awareness of it, the data is showing it, but also it points to the types of things where we can work on real solutions. And I know we want to get into housing here, but it's not just housing. The survey looked at workforce. People want jobs. At the same time, we see this optimism. We have billion-dollar announcements in every direction. They're also worried about how they can connect to those jobs, and they're worried about how they can get those jobs if they don't and can't afford childcare. So these are the issues that really laid out. When we think about economic development, sometimes you think about deals and shovels in the ground. It's about how people can access that economic development and how it can help improve the region.
Let me follow up with you, William. The surveys show remarkable consistency. Residents want obtainable housing, affordable childcare, short commutes, a clean environment. How do you prioritize that when everything feels urgent?
Gosh, thanks for the easy question, Harp.
Might as well start off with a bang.
No, I think, so how do you prioritize when everything seems urgent? I think in that survey for us, the thing that kind of is the foundation to all of those needs is housing. And I don't want to overstate it, because you need jobs to afford housing, you need childcare so you can go to work to afford housing, but our region has been growing for years, and part of the region, a reason that we've been growing is because we've been relatively affordable. And we continue to grow. Last year we added about 24,000 people to the region. 24,000 more people moved here than moved out. Overall, we've added about 100,000 people in the last 4 years. People are continuing to come here because it's relatively affordable. But what we're seeing in the numbers is that gap is increasing, the affordability is getting worse. And if you can't afford a house, all of those other problems start to multiply and start to spread. And this is something that again, when you're trying to prioritize, You know, we work on transportation at MORPC, we work on quality of life and environment, all of those things are important. But right now, what the region's telling us and what the numbers are telling us is our key characteristic of being an affordable, nice place to live may be slipping away if we don't make the investments today.
Okay, so, and this is for the whole panel, not just for you, but you mentioned all the growth we have here in Central Ohio. We're expecting to add more than 700,000 residents and 350,000 workers by 2050. This is for the whole panel again, this question. What's the single most important investment that we can make in order to prepare for that growth?
You know, the city is on the ballot in November, hopefully passing a $500 million bond issuance. And it's over $1 billion bond issuance in total, but $500 million of that will go towards housing, housing affordability, for construction and development, for emergency rental assistance, for infrastructure. And I bring that up because that's a real investment. It was an investment when the city passed a $50 million bond and then a $250 million bond. This $500 million is a real investment because it cannot and should not be just $500 million. And I know that the city is with me when I say this. It has to be leveraged and also recycled. And so the impact of that $500 million needs to be well over $1 billion in and of itself. It's important to do that because if we're going to see 700,000 new neighbors into this region by 2050, all of those people have to have places to live. But we also have to ensure that the people that are here, that we need to continue to invest in, also have places to live that are affordable, that are close to transportation, that are close to job sites, that aren't isolated by highways, that are close to amenities, all of the things that we all enjoy hopefully enjoy in our own housing. And at the end of the day, it's a fundamental basic need: security, safety. There's joy inside a home, there's happiness inside a home, there's growth and development inside of a home. And if you stabilize that housing for someone, they can actually have the mental capacity to think about that new job, that new training, that new opportunity that may come across their way. They can think about their health differently, their mental health. Housing truly is the stabilizing force. So that $500 million is going to go a very long way. And I'm excited to know that, you know, obviously the Affordable Housing Trust, but there are so many other partners here in this room who are looking to collaborate with one another so that we can really leverage those dollars and increase that impact. So it's well beyond that initial $500 million investment.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Affordable Housing Trust and how that works?
Sure. So the Affordable Housing Trust, we're a nonprofit lender. We've been in existence for 24 years. We are funded by the county through real estate conveyance fees and also by the city through a portion of bed taxes. And we provide gap financing for affordable housing transactions. And they are as large as 300 unit low-income housing tax credit deals and as small as a single-family home or a duplex that is affordable for that area median income. And we play a really significant role in the development community because deals don't get done without low-cost capital. Deals don't get done without public-private partnership. There was a time where some of these incentives were nice to have. Some of these low-cost capital options were nice to haves, but developers didn't necessarily need them. There's really no situation where the necessity isn't so great that a developer, whether they're market rate or affordable, needs access. The other thing that makes us unique and special is that we are mission driven. And so we are committed to ensuring that growth in this region happens across all spectrums, all races, all genders, all neighborhoods. The city is actually hosting a forum that they've done over the last couple years that used to be called Housing for All, and they've recently changed it to call it How Good Is Growth If It's Not For All? I think I butchered the name, but the sentiment is there. And it's a focus more on economic development, and so not just housing, but housing is a crux of it. And it's acknowledging the fact that growth isn't true growth if not all people can raise their hands and say, I'm experiencing it. And so the Affordable Housing Trust takes a very intentional stance in trying to ensure that that growth and those access to affordable housing is there for everyone.
Other panelists would like to chime in on what they would invest in to prepare us for growth?
Housing is obviously the most important thing to work on. If you don't feel safe, to Ian's point, if you don't feel safe, if you don't have somewhere to lay your head, know your kids are okay, it's really difficult to go to work and actually have a productive day. But you need a well-paying job to get affordable housing, and you can't get housing without that, but you can't get a job unless you have an address to show. So it's, you know, nothing happens in isolation, right? All of these pieces have to play their part together. Like, all these pieces have to move together because you really can't do one without the other. But unless you have somewhere to lay your head and know your kids are safe, it's really difficult to do anything else.
Sure. Well, I'm going to resist the urge to say, well, childcare is the most important, to Sangeeta's point, because our families don't come in pieces. They're experiencing all these systems and challenges at once. But what I do know as a statewide leader, and I see communities who have had fits and starts, have made incredible progress, that with respect to the incredible leadership and brilliant people in this community, this region is behind as a lifelong Columbus resident. And so what I worry about is if childcare isn't prioritized alongside these other items, we're not just going to lose the opportunity to make progress and meet the needs for folks. Families are going to lose services. So just for a little bit of context, to maintain the statewide publicly funded childcare system next budget, state budget cycle, we have to fill $600 million just to maintain the status quo over the biennium from one-time federal dollars that are going to be going away. We're facing right now a big fight in Congress around funding levels because 70% of the childcare, publicly funded childcare system in the state is relying on federal dollars. So I don't believe it's just a public or just a private sector solution. I focus very much on having a strong state funding partner that comes alongside, but we need the federal partner and we need local partners, not just to meet the needs of communities here and the families here that need the services, but to build the movement and the priority across the state so our statewide leaders see the success and are able to scale it and feel the demand from this region's leaders equally. I think it's brilliant the county and with Commissioner Crawley's leadership made the connection between childcare and housing in the Franklin County RISE program and the way ARPA funds were invested, because our childcare profession, not unlike Sangeeta's folks that she's working with alongside day to day, are making on average $14 per hour. So prioritizing that workforce in that community with some housing support goes a long way, not just to provide their housing needs, but keep the sector held up in the childcare space, in addition to providing access to more families here locally. But I will share what I think is always a humbling statistic to kind of close my comments, because I believe there's all of the brilliance in the world to figure this out and lots of other communities to look towards about kind of mistakes along the way as you increase access to childcare here locally. But across the state, Ohio's economy loses $5.48 billion on childcare, and a little under $2 billion in tax revenue. So actually, if you invest in childcare, you can pay for childcare and supporting families because of the increased revenue, because people are fully able to participate in the workforce, and you're getting people making money and providing that tax revenue. So I know that there are lots of competing concerns, but I so worry for this community that is beautiful and growing, and the families that are coming here are not going to want to stay here if they can't meet the needs of their very youngest children, who are not just today's parental workforce, but tomorrow's workforce in a very short time as they grow in this community.
I want to go back to growth here. So 100,000 new people
in Central Ohio since 2020. That's like Bexley and Gahanna and Dublin just being plopped down on the region. And when you think about what that means with all of these issues we're talking about, what we saw in the survey is there's a recognition that we need to invest in more infrastructure. It was like two-thirds. And yes, that means roads. Yes, that means transit. Yes, that means energy. And this is something that we know that in order to help with all of these issues, we have to continue to provide a good quality of life as the region's continuing to grow. I see optimism, though, when I look around at some of the communities and their creativity on how they're tackling things. You know, we're good partners on housing with Central Ohio CIC. Franklin County helps fund our home repair program and some LED programs. These programs are really getting in to helping stabilize folks' lives as they're experiencing this competition for housing, as they're experiencing this growth. I look at transit. Yes, we'll talk about Linkus really quick, but if you look at Fairfield County, Licking County, Delaware County, they're all reinventing their transit. If you're in Fairfield County, they're trying to deliver a service so that every resident has access to transit to get them to jobs or medical appointments. In Columbus and the COTA service area here in Franklin County and a little bit beyond, last fall, voters realized, and we saw it in the survey, infrastructure is important, it underlies a lot of these issues, and they voted an $8 billion initiative to increase transit service in a way that we've never seen in Central Ohio, to build hundreds of miles of sidewalks and trails so people can actually get from their home to that transit. This is game-changing, and these are the types of things when I look at that survey data and I say that folks are looking towards the future, but they're really stressed. I think the region, whether it's communities or individuals, they're focused on how we can make investments so that we can grow better and not just bigger.
Well, I'm going to follow up, William. You said, you know, a lot of things you're talking about sound great. You know, we're moving in the right direction, but I noticed across the all four surveys that residents gave planners low marks for meeting their needs. So what's driving this response and how do we build trust? I'm sorry to keep throwing hard balls at you.
No, that's great. I appreciate it. You know, we do these surveys not as a way to stroke our ego, but to ground the work that we do. So we ask this question, how are leaders doing on these various issues? And if you dig into the survey, they will say things like, not good. They will say, we need to do more, and our leaders aren't doing enough. And I think this is an important rallying call here. I mean, we have countywide elected officials here, some mayors. I think they hear this in their day-to-day when they're talking to residents. But looking at the region as a whole, the expectations are really high. And as planners, we're no different. And that's part of the reason we did the survey, is to make sure we're not just looking at best practices and saying, well, $8 billion, check. But looking at where else can we push? How are these programs working? And I'll give you a great example. I know we keep going back to housing, but it's a really pressing issue when you look at the survey. We administer some programs, federal and state and utility, to help people stabilize their homes. We keep them warm. We keep them safe. Robert Williams, our director, is here. And when you look at how those programs have changed over time, they haven't changed very much. The level of income you need to access those programs hasn't moved very much. It's based on 80% median income. And well, what does that mean in a region like this? These programs are for homeowners. And if you look back the last 5 years and you look at the median price and where things are going, the program's designed to help people who are on the edge, who are homeowners. Well, they can't even afford a home. So this is something that, as policymakers, as planners, we need to take a hard look at things like that. Are these programs working? Are these funds that we have, are they really having the impact to get in front of these things?
You are listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. In a recent survey carried out by the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, Central Ohio residents described exactly what they want: more affordable housing, accessible childcare, and more jobs that pay a living wage. This week we hear from key leaders whose visionary work is translating that mandate into reality in Central Ohio. This week's panelists are Lynn-Ann Gutierrez with Groundwork Ohio, Ian Labatou with the Affordable Housing Trust for Columbus and Franklin County, Sangeeta Lakhani with Service Relief for Hospitality Workers, and William Murdoch with the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Our host is Dr. Harvey Miller with Ohio State's Center for Urban and Regional Analysis. We also heard opening remarks by Padmini Roy Dixon with the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. We'll return to this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum. From survey to shovel, let's get real about regional priorities after a short break.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Columbia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. In a recent survey carried out by the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, Central Ohio residents described exactly what they want: more affordable housing, accessible childcare, and more jobs that pay a living wage. This week, we welcomed key leaders whose visionary work is translating that mandate into reality in Central Ohio. This week's panelists are Lynn-Ann Gutierrez, President and CEO of Groundwork Ohio; Ian Labatou, President and CEO of the Affordable Housing Trust for Columbus and Franklin County; Sangeeta Lakhani, Executive Director of Service Relief for Hospitality Workers; and William Murdoch, Executive Director of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Our host is Dr. Harvey Miller, Director of the Center for Urban and Regional Analysis at The Ohio State University. Let's get back to this week's CMC Forum. From survey to shovel, let's get real about regional priorities.
Let me ask about another tension I saw in these surveys. It appears that residents want bold action, but fewer than half said they'd support higher taxes for infrastructure and services. So how do we reconcile that tension? This is really for everybody, not just you, William. I don't want to keep putting you on the spot with these tough questions.
So you can't ask me.
Whoops.
I think there's an educational component to people really understanding what does infrastructure mean. At a good kind of pre-forum conversation with a gentleman who is a known architect in the room. And, you know, if someone says Affordable Housing Trust, there are a lot of people that don't know what it is that we do and that they could actually access our funds to develop. If someone were to say, I want to build an ADU in my backyard for my aging parent, how difficult is that process? Who do they go to? There's a lot of unknowns and there's a lot of barriers there. I used to work in a space where my job was to either lobby on behalf of certain initiatives or help walk people through complicated, kind of, you know, sticky, messy processes in order for them to get done what they needed to get done. And so if there's an opportunity for public officials and for city government and county government to continue to educate, but also streamline things, make things easier. For example, what we've done with Zone In and what the city has done with Zone In, making things easier for people to understand so they know what's available to them and how to go through the process, that goes a long way to not only seeing results, but just building trust. And building trust is such a huge thing in relationships, in all of our personal relationships, professional relationships, and we should have strong relationships with our public officials and our public servants. And so educating people, making things easier, streamlining processes so that people can just gain access in an easier way. And I have seen a commitment from the county, from the city, from, you know, cross-sector collaborators, from public-private partnerships. People are realizing that that's a way to decrease costs, get people on board with initiatives. And so there's been, I think, a different level of investment in doing those things. And I think we just need to continue to do more of them.
Others want? Oh, please, go ahead.
I think when, you know, you fill out a survey and you're like, oh, the leadership isn't doing enough. Nobody ever likes their boss, right? So, of course, the leadership isn't doing enough. But I think they're just so removed from what's happening behind closed doors. It's, you know, giving people access by saying there's a portal that makes it easy for you to apply. When you're talking to a majority of people that don't have access to a laptop to then go to that portal, you've already lost this demographic. So to say that we're streamlining things and we're making it easier and, you know, you can go to the library, well, there's not a bus that goes from my, you know, from the shelter to the library, so I can't make it to the library. Once I get there, I have a reading disability. I don't know how to work said computer. I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking for. I don't even know the questions to ask. So there's just this helplessness within a community that can't seem to get that step up. So, you know, no matter how hard the leaders are working and no matter how much magic is happening behind these closed doors, if the people on the ground can't touch those stars, can't find a path to them, it's lost work in a sense, because the people that need it the most don't have access to it. So there needs to be, I don't know if it's a door-to-door movement, you know, we seem to have plenty of money and plenty of people around when it comes time for a census, so why don't we hire some of these people and go door-to-door to these families and sit down with them and be like, how can I help you? Here's what's available. How do I help you get there? And I think that people piece is what is missing in, you know, this wide gap from what is being provided to what people can actually access.
Real quick, I just want to say thank you for saying that. There's this sentiment of meeting people where they are. I have a 10-year-old son, and he was working on decimals last night, and in my mind, he should be getting it very easily. But I had to remind myself I needed to meet him where he was in order for him to understand what the homework was that he was working on. And I feel like that sentiment is knocking on doors, coming to people's neighborhoods, showing that you really, truly care about them enough to meet them where they are. But it's also meeting them where they are without judgment. And understanding the context behind why they may not have trust in government or a healthcare system or a bank, and not judge them for that, but meet them where they are, and that will go a very long way.
Yeah, I'm kind of going back to the original question. I can't say a lot about this tension because usually when we poll on issues specific to childcare and investment in early learning, now, we're not testing that then next in a statewide ballot issue yet, but we often see that people do make decisions about who they vote for or what they're willing to invest in, and it is overwhelmingly positive in terms of investments in childcare across party lines. Certainly there are some differences with that. So I think that's an opportunity. You know, economic development broadly and the way families view their work, we've started to socialize that childcare is infrastructure, but I think we use a lot of lingo, and when we go to make those relationships with families, we oftentimes can get lost in our own sauce. And so we do a lot of survey work as well, but we've done a lot to invest deeply in participatory research. It would be like the most stuffy way to say it, but really just family voice engagement. So there is a very grassroots component to this in building the movement and building the willingness for residents and to pressure leaders, and residents also hold themselves accountable to investing back in the community. And for so many, they feel that they have been left behind because it's a survey here or there, and we're guilty of this too, right? But closing that feedback loop, I know from talking with our families that they don't expect system change overnight. They really don't. Like, their expectations are not out of this world. They don't expect us to solve all their problems, you know, on this fast-paced timeline. But they do want to know, here, you know, here's what I heard you say, and here's what the next step is we're going to take with this feedback. And oh, by the way, we will come back and actually follow through on coming back to circle back with them.
Okay, great comments. Everyone, it's CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions, and we're going to move to questions from our live stream and in-person audience in just a minute or two. If you have a question, please make your way to the microphone in the back of the room. If you're joining us online on YouTube, you can type your question into the chat. And before we take audience questions, I have one last question. Let's call this a lightning round. What's one word you think that Central Ohio residents would use to describe the region today? And what's one word that, you would like them to, describe the region in 2040?
One word. Oh my gosh. Can I hyphenate? One word for today is growing, and 2050, better, if we do it right.
Hopeful, still hoping.
For today, inequitable, but in 2040, hopefully the N is lopped off of that and we can say that is truly an equitable region.
I'll mimic growing for the word for today, and I'll say accountable, because I think our leaders and all of ourselves have to be accountable to the outcomes here we're talking about.
Okay, thank you very much, panelists. And now Doug Buchanan will be curating questions from our live stream audience. And for those of you who are in person, please join Doug at the microphone. Doug.
Harvey, thank you very much. And thank you so much to today's panelists. If you have a question for today's panel, please do join us here at the microphone. If you're watching online, please type your question into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as possible. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in just a few seconds or sentences. And what punctuation mark does a question end with? They end with question marks. Yes, they do. Thank you. I'll start us off with this one that was submitted before the forum. It comes to us from Lee Martin. While high-density housing and mass transit are characteristics of most larger cities, Columbus seems to be making not much progress in either area, preferring to promote sprawl and deferring investment in rail elsewhere or to other time periods. While tremendous growth is projected, we seem to be stuck in the 50s, the 1950s. Will Columbus ever develop intercity rail service to get cars off the road and high-density housing that makes such rail systems efficient?
I promise I didn't send that one in myself. If you read the news today, you'll see that the Columbus Metro ranks really low when it comes to traffic congestion. I know nobody believes me here, but it's true relative to the rest of the country. But that's if you're driving in a car. If you're looking at how to get around the region with transit, if you're looking for a passenger rail train, you gotta somehow get to Cleveland. We are way behind on these things. And on the transit piece, I feel really good on the investments that we're making to catch up. Linkus wasn't just about one bus rapid transit line or one area of town. It looks at the entire CODA area comprehensively, giving people options where they are. So you talked about meeting people where they are, talked about results. It doesn't matter where you live in that area. Linkus was designed to deliver on that promise. And yes, we got a lot of work to catch up, but my goodness, this initiative will push us to do that. On passenger rail, if you know MORPC at all and our local governments, we are painfully aware that our region is the largest in the country. That's not on the national network. And we are working very assertively to do this. And the good news, and this is such a planner answer, Harv, we are in the federal pipeline to develop this stuff. We are about to move to what's called step two for lines to Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Chicago. There is real work being done, real money being put to it. And over the next year or so, we're gonna have that answer of how fast will it go, where will the stations be, how will this impact us? So there is reason for hope. We're further along than we've been in a very, very long time. But my goodness, we're gonna need everybody's help to keep pushing us and holding us accountable so that we get it done.
First of all, thank you so much, panel, for just a truly wonderful and insightful discussion this afternoon. Get us all thinking about all the things that can make Central Ohio even better. My thought goes to trying to understand when we're talking to people either in Columbus, the inner ring suburbs, the exurbs, wherever, everyone seems to say, yeah, we need housing and sure wouldn't it be nice for it to be affordable. But somewhere, I'm certainly not the first to observe, there's a disconnect. Where is it that disconnect happens that some of our communities, such as my hometown of Grandview Heights, talks a lot about the need for affordable housing, but when it comes to actually doing something, it's crickets. It's excuses. What can we do? Well, first of all, what's the reason for disconnect? And what can we do to solve that problem so it's not just Columbus who's trying to solve an issue that we all need places for our folks to live when they are not working? How do we fix that? Where's the solution to try to, what's the strategy to try to get our other governments to take part?
I'll go back to talking about meeting people where they are. You know, the city of Columbus, we have the opportunity to build high density along some of those transportation corridors. We've changed our zoning code, which hadn't been changed in 70 years, to allow for that. But we can't have the expectation as a metropolitan city that some of our exurbs or even rural communities are going to adopt the same level of density. It's just not, it's not practical. But there can be changes in those areas, and we can tie those changes to outcomes. And so the conversation to me has started to change over the last couple years as to not just driving affordable housing and trying to tell other communities that they need to adopt affordable housing principles and practices. It's having that conversation about housing affordability and the why behind it. And it's talking about jobs. It's talking about opportunity for economic mobility. And, you know, housing used to be seen as a byproduct of economic mobility. Jobs will come, companies will come, housing will follow. It's not the case anymore. Housing has to actually be there for companies to bring jobs and for growth to happen in existing companies. And so I think framing the conversation around why housing affordability is important, and most things that get done become narrative driven. And in certain environments, affordable housing has a stigmatized viewpoint. Someone sees a particular type of person when you hear that. They think about the impact it's going to have on their school systems, kind of all the tropes that we've all heard. But the conversation should stem around your son or daughter is graduating from college next year. Wouldn't you like him or her to come live in your neighborhood? Is there a home that he or she could purchase? Probably not. Your mother or father is aging and you want them to be closer to you so that you don't have to invest in transportation. Where are they going to live? That's housing affordability for senior living. And so it's putting a face on what that means and meeting those people where they are so that they can really feel like they have ownership. And I'll give a plug to, you know, what's happening in the city of Columbus and regionally. The city and the county have been working on this regional housing coalition, which is going to hopefully be one of the drivers of those conversations and bringing education, bringing information, and meeting people where they are so that some of these areas are building affordably and densely in the ways that make sense for those areas so they don't feel like the city of Columbus is dictating to them.
Thank you very much. Nancy Nanny joining us online asks, is there free childcare now in some areas of the United States as in other countries? And if so, a follow-up question, how are those programs funded?
Yeah, so I should say what is in Ohio first, which is our publicly funded childcare systems offer a subsidy for families up to 145% of the federal poverty level. Then recently the governor has invested and the legislature affirmed continuance of this investment to also have a childcare choice voucher program to serve an additional 12,000 families across the state. From who are making between 146% and 200% of the federal poverty level. But that 145% of the federal poverty level puts Ohio at the lowest initial income eligibility for publicly funded childcare in the nation. So there's been a real lack of investment over time to keep pace with public funds. there are, with the exception of this one-time investment this year of $10 million, there are no state dollars that go to childcare except what is required for what's called maintenance of effort or this requirement to draw down federal funds. So there's actually less state dollars that have been invested over the past decade in childcare. Where we see success, whether it's in local communities across the state, is the identification of sustainable public revenue sources to fund childcare. And I know that seems like a really simple answer, but some of the most successful states have been able to build the public will. We see lots of activity in local communities willing to tax themselves, public-private partnerships. Here in the state in Ohio, we have examples like that sustain kind of pilot or local efforts and scale them. And then you are creating this movement of local communities have invested to, which are all last dollar in, by the way. So last dollar into the federal and state investments to create more access. But it's about identifying and committing sustainable public funds. There are lots of opportunities for public-private partnerships. We are definitely in our innovation area in that space as a state and nation. There's been some grants going out from the Department of Children and Youth at the state level working with employers to solve employee childcare barriers. But if you can think of the best childcare investment that an employer of yours might have in this room, you know that it's meeting some of the demand of the employees, right? Let's take an on-site childcare that serves 50 children. On a large campus, again, that's meeting part of the need or the demand for that the employees that work there, let alone the community members that are supporting that that business. So it's part of the solution, but dedicated public funding is absolutely essential. So other states that have seen more recent success have found those sustainable public sources, and it's been either certainly by state and local leaders that have identified those or by the voters themselves through local and statewide ballot initiatives.
Thank you, Lynn. We have about 4 minutes left for two final questions, so about 2 minutes a question.
Thank you, panelists, for a really very interesting discussion, very timely. My question really comes on the heels of what's happening at the federal government, the disinvestment there, and what more could be done kind of at the state level. And if you had your magic wand, what would you have put into, this is really to Lynn Ann, the state budget that would have provided sustainable, dedicated public funding? Because I think that's essential, but it sounds like that's getting lost really kind of at the state level and at the federal level.
Thanks for the question. Well, I think first we would have loved to have seen $600 million of state funding to sustain the system that's built up just to maintain the status quo beyond fiscal year 27 at a minimum. Because without backfilling that money next budget, which is a big number to accomplish in one budget, we've been asking for this incrementally over time, people are going to lose services. Unless another funding partner comes to rescue us. And at the federal level, even the best proposal in Congress right now for funding over the next year for the Child Care Development Block Grant is a very, very modest increase from the Senate markup. And so it's not keeping pace with the increased cost of care. So again, at least the ability to operate the system moving forward. And then specific investment additionally in solving for the childcare workforce, because you could invest $100 million tomorrow just for seats in Franklin County, but you couldn't serve those families because the programs cannot find staff and recruit and retain and then keep staff who are making on average of $14 an hour. Childcare is expensive, and I've talked with lots of business folks who are like, how can we just like make this a little cheaper? I'm like, well, we can't lower workforce wages. You can't even get folks to stay with you at that level. And you can't, this is not another product. These are our children. These professionals are building brains. So the hill I will die on is around ratios. So we, in the state of Ohio, there's one teacher to five infants or two teachers to 12. And I dropped my daughter off this morning. I don't know, how many of you have taken care of five infants at once? whoa, okay? So like their ability to have their care met, let alone that high quality interpersonal interaction that builds their executive functioning skills, that builds the brains that you want for your workforce tomorrow, that is just not possible. And so while we can make efficiencies and improve the system, and we've done a lot at the state level to reduce administrative burden, those types of things, we can only create so many efficiencies. This is an investment, and for every $1 invested, you get 13% return on investment, and that's coming from our Nobel laureate economist, James Heckman, not just Linnean Gutierrez at Groundwork. So if we invest in our young minds today, we'll see that investment return in our community from savings and across all of our systems.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we examined how survey results point to three urgent priorities: housing, childcare, and jobs that pay a living wage, and what it will take to deliver them across Central Ohio. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Linnean Gutierrez with Groundwork Ohio, Ian Labatou with the Affordable Housing Trust for Columbus and Franklin County, Sangeeta Lakhani with Service Relief for Hospitality Workers, and William Murdoch with the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Our host was Dr. Harvey Miller with the Center for Urban and Regional Analysis at The Ohio State University. We also heard opening remarks by Padmini Roy Dixon with the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. This forum was generously sponsored by the Affordable Housing Trust for Columbus and Franklin County, the Central Ohio Community Improvement Corporation, and the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by the Ellis. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.